This is RSBNB Update, episode 605, recorded Thursday, February 9th, 2017. RuneScape is not a dating website. Hello, everybody, and welcome to RSBNB Update. This week marks the introduction of our first quarterly co-host of 2017, and you guys might have heard a few weeks ago, I accidentally let it go by accident of who this was going to be. But if you, in case you didn't hear, Sirion is back with us for a quarter. You'll remember Sirion from last year.
A whole quarter of me.
Yeah, people like your voice, people like your hair, people like what you have to say. That's a winning triple combination, wouldn't you say?
I am not entirely sure how my hair comes into a voice-only podcast.
Well, I mean, it's been seen numerous times on Clan Quest.
I mean, unless you're, like, secretly posting footage of me in the video version of this podcast.
No, how would I do that? We don't have video active right now.
That's true. That's true. you never know. Maybe you found something.
Yeah, I got a hidden camera in your room there.
Oh dear.
But anyways, yeah, Sirion, you'll remember him from last year. He is head of High Council at Clan Quest and does lots of very interesting things in London, and has offered us such great opinions and discussions you and I have had on this podcast before, you know, when it came to the ARC and in general game balancing. So it was just a no-brainer to bring you back this year.
Sounds cool.
Yeah. I was thinking about you last week, actually, when we were talking about the drops of Nex, Angel of Death, not to go back to that episode, but a lot of you guys will remember my reaction to the drops of that, dropping huge amounts of energy. So that is definitely something that should be looked at going forward in regards to game balance. But you guys probably want to hear about this week's update, I'm imagining, since that's why you're listening to this RuneScape podcast. So here we are. An update to Invention. A year and a couple weeks after Invention first came out, we're having two more skills added to Invention. Smithing and fire making. Did you imagine it would be these two?
Well, they sort of gave it away like a long time ago. So I'm not surprised, but well, it would not have been my first guesses, I think.
I would have went with crafting as one of them.
Yeah, probably.
Because crafting just seems like it's so stagnant. But I can see why they did fire making, because all we got right now for fire making is regular fires and bonfires, which, when you think about it, is kind of boring as a skill. So maybe this will throw some extra reason to train fire making into it. But anyways.
And of course, it's interesting that fire making and smithing are the counterparts to woodcutting and mining, which got the Invention Edition a long while ago.
Oh, very interesting. I didn't think about that. All right, that's good. So, you need level 22 Invention to get started with these, as with all the other tools. You can augment the Crystal Tinderbox and Crystal Hammer, which you get from Priftinus, of course, if you wanted to do that, and siphon stuff away. I'm trying to think of a reason why you would do that, considering we have the Hammertron and Tinderbox-O-Matic, or Pyromatic, as they call it in-game.
I decided to go with the crystal ones for these, mostly because you can use crystal sivens,
right?
Which are
and
which
that treats
are
it as a that treats it as a level 90 tool, which we don't have for either of these skills. So
it gives 610k experience or something, I think. So that's a
siphoning
lot.
At level 12. Okay.
Yeah. So that's if you're like the cheapskate like me. If you want to go with level 9, it's going to be a bit more difficult. But also, you still get the bonuses of the normal crystal weapon. And because you replace the degrading system with the energy system, you basically, it's a one-time investment, and you just have to do the energy
right.
Every night.
So what was the benefit of the Crystal Tinderbox? Because I don't think I looked at this when it came out, when Prif came out.
I forgot.
Oh,
So
okay.
both of them at least give double chance for golden rocks.
Oh, okay. So that might be a reason you want that if you're working on those statues then.
So that's a very good start, and it always it gives a the tinderbox gives a quintuple chance on spawning on spawning a fire spirit.
All right, that's fair. Let's see. So the crystal tinderbox, degradable, quintuple fire spirit. Bonfires when equipped. So fire spirit. Okay, so just a few extra little things. But I guess if you didn't want that, you can go with the other options that they provide. And that is, of course, the hammer Tyrant and the tinderbox-o-matic. I like the fact that the news post is calling it the tinderbox-o-matic, but actually in game it's the pyromatic at level 22 invention. and of course these are the ones you would use if you're just planning on destroying them once you reach level 10, and not siphoning them away. So it's a question of what you feel more like investing in, which I think, now that we're on the topic of it, if we look up the price of a crystal siphon, those are pretty expensive because not too many people make them because of their core crystal components, right?
That is true. They are really expensive. So, yeah, I take them because I.
1.2 mil market price right now for a crystal tool siphon.
Yep.
Which, I mean, okay, that's up there, but that's a total million more than the standard crystal or standard tool siphon. So you're gonna have to make your choices there. All right. And in order to make these, you need 80 flexible and base parts, but the pyromatic requires 6 ethereal components and 4 imbued components, and the hammertron requires 6 powerful components and 4 subtle components. So that
Yeah, so
is how
that's
you
not a
make those.
reason I went with the crystal one, because solar components, like, you use them already, so much already, and they are hard to get by. Ethereal and imbued components are a bit annoying to get by. So, like, a lot of these components are a bit out there, and I'm already struggling getting all the components for, like, my fishing rods and my augmenters and siphons together. So I didn't want to add yet another set of things I
Because
wouldn't get normally.
subtle components comes from whips, defenders, and scimitars. Okay,
Yeah.
so whips. Abyssal Whip, you could purchase those and do that, I guess. Defenders, I don't think people want to destroy their defenders because of how hard those are to get. And scimitars, well, you're going to be left making anti-scimitars then. So,
Yeah.
not much choice right there on that. And those are an uncommon component. All right, so I can see why you did that. But, I mean, I guess if you're training fire making, that might be an option. Now, I wonder how the invention XP, the item XP that you get on this, will ultimately compare with Prifteena's waterfall fishing if you were to say burn magics all the way or smith rune items.
I think, especially like smithing, is definitely can be a really fast skill if you throw the money at it. So I think you can definitely beat
Or
fishing
even
there. But
Artisan's Workshop.
yes, I definitely think you can beat fishing there, but it's gonna cost you. So.
Right. And I don't know about the rest of the RS community, but for me personally, I'm in a bit of a holding pattern right now with the smithing skill because I don't want to train it really until the rework comes out. I'm level 97 right now, and I would like the feeling of having some kind of progress once it's reworked, if you know what I mean. So I'm kind of putting a hold on all smithing training right now.
Yeah, I'm 99, so that doesn't really.
Well, I guess you'll have access to all the content when it arrives.
I'm hoping to get some fun out of the mastery still.
And you know what I think a great thing about this is if you're wanting to train invention and you know you might be a skiller or something and you don't want to go with fishing the entire way, and let's just say you got 99 woodcutting and you're one of those people who, you know, doesn't do crystal trees or ivy because you want something to have at the end of the day. Well, let's just say you cut magic logs. Well, there you go. You can throw these magic logs into a bonfire. Now you got a way to get some invention XP along the way to 99 fire making.
Or
So,
even elder logs if you like.
if you wanted
Yeah.
to do that. But I think it's just good to put more options out there. And, you know, we've been around the park before on this, so we know exactly how the XP is going to work. And fishing is there. smithing is expensive. Fire making is expensive. So I don't think fishing is in danger being dislodged as a core way people train invention right now. So it wasn't really too disruptive.
I think it fills a nice niche where people can spend a bit more money on actually like training invention to all the skills. So definitely seems balanced as far as we can tell.
Right.
We don't really have to wait, of course, but
mm-hmm.
at least we haven't seen people get 99 invention or 120 invention in like a few hours through this. So
yeah, that's good. That was fixed a long time ago when the skill first came out. All right. Well, I think these are just here and they're going to reside in the background, and people who are going to want to train these skills up with invention on the side are going to do that. But I think what we're really here to talk about this week are the 5 new perks that came out with this update. So they are called Prosper, Pyromaniac, Rapid, Breakdown, and Tinker. Prosper is for all of the skills and tools. And you may find clue scrolls while skilling, only one rank available. Pyromaniac for fire making, 0.1 chance per rank to burn all the logs of the same type in your inventory. Rapid, smithing or fire making, 5% chance per rank to speed up each action. That could be good. Breakdown, 20% chance per rank to automatically disassemble smith items with 5 ranks. So 20 times 5, 100%. And Tinker for smithing or fire making, 1% chance per rank for each action to grant an additional 10% XP. Okay. My eyes are looking at Rapid and Breakdown right now.
Yeah. So Rapid definitely is sort of like happy to see this because 120 fire making is still somewhere on my wish list. So definitely going to make use of these perks. But I've seen that Pyromaniac, of course, is also going to be helpful if you look at...
Can you imagine the huge amounts of XP you would get from that?
Yeah, so Pyromaniac, I suppose you can compare that with the bonus you get from divination caches, where you can... you get like this buff where for 20 minutes... you have a chance that all your memories in your inventory get converted at the same time. It's basically that, but like with a lower chance across the board. So,
yeah, that's good. And I mean, even as you're leveling up, this kind of thing would be great. And, you know, I don't think it's too overpowered, but it strikes a nice balance of just speeding fire making up. And I think it still begs the question. I mean, okay, what's the difference between starting a fire at level 10 and level 90? And I think if we were to truly look at fire making as a skill, that's something we would look into. But maybe it's not even fair to be having this discussion right now because A, this isn't a podcast this week about fire making, and B, fire making was a skill that was brought in with RS Classic. So I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, like it may sound quite powerful, but you need... So the best way to get Pyromaniac, for example, is using explosive components. For explosive components, you need hand cannons. And I think everybody that knows something about invention knows something about hand cannons. So
yeah,
that can get expensive really quickly if you really want to get a good level of that perk.
Right. What else? What kind of components can we look at for the other perks? How about Prosper?
So that is probably evasive components you're looking at. Not entirely sure what items you would disassemble for evasive.
No, that's a good start. I wonder, do we know what kind of clue scrolls you can find if they're correlated to your total level? Are they going to be elites or hards? Or
there have been discussions about this, but I haven't been following them really.
All right.
What I have read is that like if you have like an easy and medium, it's not going to improve the chances of getting a heart or an elite score. So they're on separate drop tables, basically.
Oh, okay. So that's interesting. We see this month, because next month is, of course, the clue scroll rework. So there might be some further tinkering to the Prosper perk when that arrives.
Yeah.
Then we have Rapid, which I guess is 5 shifting components. Not sure where you would get those. But
Rune Hastas are pretty good, apparently.
All right, fair enough.
I think also crossbows give them some other things. But yeah.
All right, then breakdown, probably the one everyone's going to be looking for. Undead components.
Yeah, so the best way to get those are T90 shields, which are 2.5 mil each. So
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess you do it once and away you go, right? And you don't need to, like, you would definitely want to do a crystal hammer on that one.
Yeah, probably.
And, I mean, okay, so let's just say you're smithing items and you're wanting to get components. Okay, so you're losing the money initially, but how many components is someone going to need to get to level 120 invention realistically based on their own smithing?
A lot.
Yeah. And, you know, another thing that whenever we're talking about smithing, I always want to look forward to the mining and smithing rework and say, okay, so we have rune stuff at level 90 right now, and then we take that down to level 50 for the mining and smithing rework. So does that mean that all these components we get from rune right now will be taken down to level 50 smithing eventually?
I'm pretty sure there will be a balance over that as well.
Yeah. And then we're going to have a lot more about that. Because, yeah, you're right. That would be unfeasible for that. So, all right. Undead components, very painful to get. And finally, Tinker. 5 fungal components.
Yeah. So, you can also get them quite easily with clockwork components. But, like, they are really, really difficult to get by. So, probably better off using fungal components. Because you can get them guaranteed from disassembling Gano.
Ah, okay. And I mean, and that's probably not too hard to get nowadays, is it?
No, and like lots of people actually use Gano as like a cheap way, like cheap armor that you can augment and then disassemble. So it's around.
All right.
And if you use it, if you're one of those people that actually does use it to level up and disassemble, you get it for free. Especially after a few levels, you get double or probably even, I think even more components when disassembling. So,
yeah. All right. All these perks actually seem useful, which is good. There's nothing negative, which I think if they put negative perks out, they'd probably have a riot on their hands, given how many negative perks already exist in the game. What's your favorite?
I think it's gonna be Pyromaniac.
All right.
Just because, like Tinker is like just more XP. It's a bit boring.
And
breakdown
only
is 30%.
Potentially 30% XP, if at max.
No. 10%, but the chance increases, not the
okay. So, that's not much at all. All right, I'm gonna go with Tinker. I'm sorry, breakdown. We were just talking about
breakdown
it.
Is really helpful.
And I say this as someone who's gone from level 1 to 68 invention. I've probably only spent about 2 million on it, and that was in a futile attempt to try and get crystal components to make a crystal siphon. So I really haven't spent that much on invention. It's all been done with stuff that I've gained on my own. So I am very pleased with that result, and that's why I'm only level 68 invention right now. And, you know, seeing these tools out here definitely gives me reason to think, okay, so maybe I could go train smithing, get the components, and do invention along the way. That might be a fun thing to do. And we'll have to see if there's other hammers to augment when the mining and smithing rework comes out. So this could
be interesting.
This could be very beneficial indeed. All right. I don't think there's much else to say about the invention update here. Just the fact that it's here and it actually makes invention feel a little bit more fleshed out than when it first arrived. So.
Yeah.
All right. 15-year veteran cape. First of us are going to be able to get it on February 23rd. How long until you get yours?
3 years and a bit.
I'm
one of these people that so I started playing like probably about 15 years ago, to be honest, but I made a different account after a few years, so
yeah.
That's okay. The one I'm playing on right now, so I'm always a bit behind.
Yeah, I was utterly surprised when I went to go check with Hans about this. He said, you get your 15-year veteran cape in 17 days. Like, what? I made my RS account on or before February 23rd, 2002? That was just very astounding to me, because I had no idea that this was going to be happening, because I started with membership in the summer of 04, and probably a couple months before that started playing RS2 seriously. So I have no idea what I was doing for those prior to 2 years, whether it was on and off. That would have been RS Classics. That might explain a few things, but I have no idea that my account has been around this long. So on the 23rd of February, I will have that 15-year veteran cape to show off. I think that's saying something. So
it's 15 years is a long time.
It really is. And considering RS just turned 15 last year, you know, this is effectively half my life. Putting it that way, actually more than half. So it was something totally unexpected. But you can check your progress by talking to Hans and Lumbridge. First of us will get it on February 23rd. So that should definitely be something to celebrate. If anyone out there is listening also has your 15-year, let me know, and we'll swap stories about the bad old days of RS Classic and the days it would take, you know, forever to chop wood because you had to keep clicking and you didn't just get to sit back and relax. So...
or banking in VeraCorp, that was a pain.
Right. Do you remember the Surtrs, Niles, Miles, and Giles?
No, I don't remember those.
Yeah, that was before RS2, and they had three NPCs, Niles, Miles, and Giles, to cert your ores, fish, and logs, because that is a feature that people wanted to trade them easier. Yeah. And of course, that became a feature with RS2, where you can put anything in note form in your bank. So
yeah.
Also this week, they added an alternative emote to the 10-year cape available as a right-click option. And the reason for this, I think, is because if you look at the 10-year cape as it is, you know, you just get an X, and that's really not that impressive. So I'm glad they did this for the 10-year cape holders as well.
Yep, because the 5-year cape had one.
That's right.
So it was a bit weird.
Yeah, 15 years, considering RS just turned 15 last year, even though I don't remember it back then. All right. Well, then, moving on to the patch notes for this week. A number of things that are here and will improve the value of gameplay, I think. So starting off, Araxi, QBD, Beastmaster, Durzag, and Yakamaru, and Rush of Blood loot chests will now all show their value when you open them. So you'll know totally how much you're making, which I guess is kind of nice. For me, Queen Black Dragon was the only boss that I really became proficient at, and I don't know, I just had no idea, no desire to go further on that, I guess. So maybe might be time to go back and earn some GP with that. I don't know, we'll see. God tokens from World Event 2, is all the way back in the tail end of 2013 now. They count as the appropriate god faction when you wear them in the God Wars dungeon, which makes sense. Armadil or Bandos. There's no reason why it shouldn't count for that. It gives everyone a free item to wear around in your pocket slot. Players can now set specific colors for their memorial to Guthic plinths, provided the colors have been unlocked. I think this is a nice thing to offer people who have done it all, because the colors are different for each prestige that you do. And, I mean, why not let people decide, right?
People like the pretty stuff, so...
Yeah. I still maintain they're going to be doing something else with that memorial area, considering we're coming up to 4 years on that.
Might be.
Yeah. Buy options of 25 and 50 have been added to the Wyco reward shop for Ark, Teletams, Contract Contacts and the Banky Crablet. You know, I was actually going to check this out before the show, but I forgot to do it because you and I have been discussing this since the end of the year, that the Teletab icons are still missing in that reward shop. And, you know, there's just nothing there that says what they are. So if they did this, I'm actually going to log in quickly right now.
So are you talking about the icon?
Yeah.
That has been fixed.
Oh, okay, good. When did they fix that?
I have a bunch of Wico tablets in my bank.
Oh, so it wasn't just the store.
It was the entire icon.
Wow. All right.
Yeah, there was like this empty spot in my bank. It was nice because for like a while I had this placeholder I could just drag around. But
and you're getting those actually with the bank rework.
Yeah.
Courtesy of the old school folk.
Yeah. Yeah. So that has been fixed like 2 weeks ago, but it was a thing for many, many weeks. So
yeah,
that was quite surprising.
Players dying to non-PvP combat in the wilderness will no longer have their augmented items instantly deleted. That's good. Can you imagine losing like an augmented sword or something like that, and you just die to a dragon in the wilderness or a moss giant? That'd be bad.
If you die to moss giants, the wilderness is not the place for you.
Yeah, I just said that because that's, you know, where the farming patch is, and in case there was someone up there who was very low health. But players spectating from the balcony from next Angel of Death kill they died in are no longer eligible to roll for loot. Makes sense. You're dead at the end. You shouldn't get a chance for the loot.
It's interesting because I think in raids you actually do get the loot at the end.
Oh, okay. So that might have been something that was carried forward then.
Yeah. Because I once went for a Yakmaru attempt and I didn't do very well. I died, but I still got the loot in the end. So.
Oh, very interesting. All right. Players trapped in the icicle during next Angel of Death encounter can no longer deal damage. Which makes sense. If you're frozen, you shouldn't be able to deal damage. They also increase the icicle's armor and bleed count for lower thresholds during next Angel of Death encounter. Also buffing the smoke blades in next Angel of Death, increasing the armor of the blood reavers in next Angel of Death as well. So some buffs to various things in next Angel of Death that should make it more balanced in the favor of next, I guess. And, you know, they will look at things like this after the update hits and see if there's certain phases that are not doing enough damage to the players or perhaps doing too much and balance them out. And that's what this week is definitely focusing on, which is good, I think. You don't want it to be too easy. Now, one for all you guys out there who use the aggression potion. If you want to get rid of that effect, you can now just have a nice sip of tea. And I quote, "Nothing like a calming cup of tea," Jagex says. Very British of them, I think, eh?
I think a British person would say copper.
Yeah, isn't that what I said?
They would omit tea.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Prevented players from protecting demonic skulls in the wilderness by noting them with magic notepaper. Now there's an idea.
I don't know. I think it's clever. I mean, good that it's patched, but like, all kudos to the person who found this out.
And, yeah. And then, I mean, you get all the XP. You don't need to worry about losing it if you die.
Yeah.
That's great. The Port Sarum Fishing Shop has had a permanent doorstop added by the ninjas again. The Catherby Range House has had a permanent doorstop added by the ninjas again. So obviously some stuff there got reverted out, and someone who was writing the patch notes was upset that it was removed because the ninjas meticulously put that in, but I guess someone probably saw that as a bug that the doors weren't opening or weren't able to be shut. And I mean, that's kind of obvious, right? Because if you're thinking real life, a door should be able to close. Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's one of these things that happen in software development. Like when you do something that's maybe non-standard, like it gets reverted. It's a documentation issue.
Yeah. And do you forget to add compost before planting stuff? Me too. It sucks. That's what the ninja Ninja Mod says, now you can place compost on the ground just after planting something. That's good. You know,
it makes the behavior of buckets of compost consistent with the spell, the
fertile soil.
Yeah.
Yeah. And plus, I mean, you can do that in real life. You might have varying effects, but who cares? It's a game. And I'm just thinking how many trees this might have saved that I forgot to super compost on my way to 120.
That's also why I switched to using Luna Magics. Just
yeah, you know, that's another thing I did. All the way from level 1 to 120 farming, I made my own super compost.
Wow.
So, and it's easy to do. I mean, all you need to do is you either need to do a skill of the month where you plant tons of watermelons. After one skill of the month, I had like 13,000 watermelons. Maybe not all from one, but I had 13,000 watermelons to use. And mm-hmm. after getting 120, I'm down to 5,000. So, and if you're not wanting to do it that way, you can just get your free daily pineapples from Karamja, and there you go.
Yeah. I use the pineapples to protect papaya trees, but...
Okay. Favorite worlds are now also saved in the top of your hop worlds interface in the world switching menu. So, all right. Anything else in the patch notes that I missed that you want to bring up?
No, you got a lot of them. So,
yeah, there was nothing truly controversial this week, I think, and there was a good coverage of the next changes, and nothing on the combat side that was really too changing for EOC. So, we're good. All right, you know what time of the year it is next week?
Yes.
Valentine's Day. So we have the Valentine's Day event in-game right now. It runs from February 9th through the 14th, and all you need to do is head to the Lumbridge Crater and talk to Wizard Deedit. Have we seen Wizard Deedit before in the game?
I do not remember the name.
Yeah, that's a very unique name. So, you know, much like other seasonal events, you can perform 100 reputation actions a day, unless you use a treasure hunter potion to do more. You can get XP in these skills. These are some truly impressive skills that you can get here. And they are magic, smithing, mining, invention, herblore, or hunter. So... lots of people dislike Hunter. Lots of people dislike Herblore because it's expensive. So there's some good options right there. Magic or Invention. If you're looking to top up on Invention XP, you can do that. Granted, you won't get the... I wonder if you get inspiration from doing this. I mean, it doesn't seem like you would because you're not doing traditional skilling.
I mean, you can easily get the inspiration by doing other skills, so...
yeah, I guess so. All right. So I will definitely be doing this for Herblore, and I've already got a few of the extra potions that allow me to continue on. You need to use a counter agent, and you get these from Treasure Hunter. So it'll be very, very good to spend some time there and do this. At least that's what I plan on doing. I don't know about you.
I haven't gotten them yet in Treasure Hunter. But yeah, I'll definitely try to max out my reputation every day. I already missed out on today because I forgot it started. So
yeah, it's a little bit odd starting it so soon to Valentine's Day. You'd think they'd start it next Monday or something, for example. But
or over the weekend, but like not on Thursday.
Yeah. But the crater's very pink. There's lots of hearts and whatnot, and yeah, very Valentine's Day themed. Lots of balloons, heart shaped balloons. So. Reward wise, you can get a bunch of flowers, the Staff of Devotion, which has various different level settings, a heart balloon, a loved up loot beam, the loved up resting animation, the loved up walk override, and medium prismatic stars once you've unlocked all the other rewards here. So not too many rewards to unlock. You can unlock most of them, I think, with the daily amount of reputation and XP that you can earn here. So definitely something to do, I think. And I mean, who wouldn't want a loved up walk override, right?
Sure. Yeah, sure. Why not?
Or a bunch of flowers that you could give to someone you're chasing around on RS, right?
I thought we had these, like, fake flower weapon thingies. So.
Yeah, we did, but you can't give them... I mean, they don't look like Valentine's Day ones. They're just the ones you get from the Mithril Seeds at the Legends Guild.
Shane, I have to tell you something.
What's that?
RuneScape is not a dating site.
Well, I mean, we're kind of heading there with this update, right?
It looks like it, yeah. I think that quick chat is going to be used quite a lot.
I mean, we already have the mistletoe from Christmas a few years ago.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So
what do you think is going to happen on the 15th? Because there's apparently a second part to this update.
Yeah, I think it's going to be like the sprite event that happened back in October where, you know, we gather the stuff at the beginning of it, and then at the end you're going to be able to just dump this devotion dust that you get into some crater-type thing. I'm not sure what it'll be. Maybe it'll be a big heart. And then after that, you'll get the dust while you're skilling and be able to get some benefits that way.
All right.
Also, the things that you use Herblore on here look like a variation of a pink Teletubby. So just keep that in mind when you head on over to the crater. Lots of very interesting graphics here as well. So, I mean, I'm just looking at the screenshots of it right now, and it's very pink and it's very heart-like. It doesn't seem to fit at all within regard to RuneScape, but hey, it is what it is, right?
We've done like lots of things with Lumbridge Crater. It's really hard to surprise me these days.
Yeah, it's become a communal event space, really. And I don't know. I'm just wondering if anyone's going to chase after me with a bunch of flowers. But anyways, that's the Valentine's Day update. You guys have until the 14th to do this, and then something else will happen after the 15th. And if you get potions, hey, that's extra XP in one of these skills. I'm going to be using mine on Herblore, I think, just because it's such a expensive skill initially to train with. Also of note, at level 68 invention, I got 98.6 invention XP per tick here. So,
all right.
So it was pretty good. Herbalore wise, 74.1 at level 199 plus. I almost said level 104 or something. But anyways, moving on from that. Next up, Double XP Weekend Expanded. They are changing the way Double XP Weekend works in the following week. But I don't know. What do you think of this? You think it's a good idea to be allowing XP to trail off after the initial 72 hours?
So I wasn't really smart and sort of planned that entire weekend full with all this stuff. So I, for one, am quite happy with this. I think it's very reasonable. Like, you always get this one weekend, and if you're otherwise occupied, you're out of luck. And 1 million XP is not that big, and it's not that you get like, it starts with like double XP, but it like slowly decreases.
Yeah, 5% for every 5,000 or 50,000 XP gained.
Yeah, so it's only a small bonus, but it's a nice gesture, I think, for people that,
yeah, and
like bonus XP weekends are always this weekend where people are always like, oh, I have to make the best of it and have to grind through
stay up for 48 hours. Some people do, which I totally don't get. But
72 even, like,
oh my gosh,
like, we had people in the clan that like after like 24 hours were like, okay, maybe I'm gonna grab like 2 hours of sleep, and I'm like, I last weekend was the first weekend where I decided no preparation. I'm just gonna like do what I do normally and like do what I feel like.
Yeah, that's what I did last
generally
time.
How I play the game, yep, these days anyway. And I don't know, I think doing it this way,
it's so much more relaxing.
I hope it sort of takes the pressure of it a bit. I don't think it does that much, but I don't know. It's a nice gesture, and I mean, 1 million XP, like, it's a lot if you're low to mid level. But
most definitely.
If you're going for a 120, that's 104 million experience. Like, it's It's like look at like summoning. You're gonna go through that in an hour,
in a few runs. So
yeah. I think it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean it's a good thing to do because.
It shows that Jagex is like willing to look at it. Like we have had these bonus XP weekends for a while now, and it's showing that like Jagex is willing to look at these things and think like, how can we make this better? How can we make it still fair but nicer for users? And that's always good. And like hopefully, I mean, this might be an experiment, and hopefully we'll see new iterations of that in the future.
Yeah, most definitely. And of course, it runs for the full week, 20th through the 27th. So it also includes the next weekend. So it doesn't matter when you start on that week, you can take advantage of it. So that's going to be a good way to do it, I think. Much more relaxing.
Yeah.
All righty. One piercing note on Amazon Alexa. The competition here that is unfortunately only available to people in the UK, US, and Canada. But if you go to their Facebook page, you don't need a Facebook account to enter. Just answer the question and submit your details, and you're automatically entered for a chance to win one of 10 Amazon Echo devices. Now, you might be wondering, why is Jagex giving away an Amazon Echo? Well, they've actually put out a tool on the Amazon Echo service that allows you to go through the One Piercing Note quest in a, voice-controlled quest, maybe, is the best way of saying it. So you start off the quest, and then you will answer which way you would like to go with that. Kind of like what Maud Raven did in leading up to Sliske's endgame to reveal some of the rewards. So, you know, very interesting, given that One Piercing Note was a very audio-centric quest with the song and all the environmental sound effects as well. So the fact this is coming to Amazon Alexa as the first Alexa quest, I think, is very interesting. So unfortunately, I don't have one of these, so I can't test this out. But if you already have an Amazon Alexa, or is it an Echo? I have no idea what I'm supposed to be calling this thing.
It's an Amazon Echo, but the assistant is called Alexa.
Okay, fair enough. So basically what you do is it's a skill, which is what they call their voice-controlled apps, I guess, and you just guide it with your voice about where you're going to go in this One Piercing Note quest. So very interesting. And they even have a full page set up for the support and how to use it set up on runescape.com/Alexa if you already have one. So why do you think they're doing this?
So my first response was immediately like, yes, this is sort of where Jagex is going. We saw it started like a while ago when Jagex started with Chronicle. There's now Isle Adventures and now this, and what it shows, I think, is that Jagex is really looking in expanding their RuneScape intellectual property or IP.
Basically the RuneScape brand.
I think this is a shift in like the Jagex company, like what it does. Because
Right. Remember
that a couple of years ago, there was RuneScape, and it was RuneScape, and there was like Funorb, which had some RuneScape stuff, but it was different.
Yeah, there were very loose links to it.
And then there was this other game. Was it called War of Legends or something? It was this browser game. And then there was the Transformers game they were going to do. And like lots of different games. And
Funorb still exists, by the way.
Funorb still exists, but none of the other things really picked up. And like they sort of died off. And it seems that they're sort of now changing things around, and instead of doing entirely different things, is they take the product that is really the most successful, and they're gonna like start taking things out of it and using that as intellectual property for other games. And this is something you can also see happening with Blizzard, for example, because like World of Warcraft and the Warcraft games and Hearthstone, there's all the same characters.
Right. And plus, then you have Heroes of the Storm, that is a catch-all for all the Blizzard stuff. You have all the Blizzard heroes from World of Warcraft, StarCraft, and now Overwatch appearing in Heroes of the Storm.
Yeah. So, as you can see, like, Jagex is going that direction a bit, and they are trying to generalize the RuneScape universe into something that is bigger than just the MMO, and this is one of those steps. They try to earn money with the lore of the game, which, I mean, we are both questers, so we have always had this appreciation for the lore, and to be honest, it's really good most of the time.
Right. I kind of know what you have in your mind right now, but we won't say it.
Most of the time. So it's an interesting move, and it seems to pay off. Like, Chronicle is a moderate success. Idle Adventures, maybe not so much, but, I mean, as long as Google gets the money, that's Google.
Jumping ahead to tech news, are we?
Jumping ahead to tech news, yeah. I should not keep these notes open. As long as Jagex gets the money, that's the most important part. And I think it's an interesting strategy. I don't know if it pays off, but Blizzard is a highly successful company.
And I mean, they just need one huge success. And I mean, you're not going to get a huge success on Alexa, I think that's for sure. But this is perhaps just a good way of getting people aware of it and say, what is RuneScape? Then when you go to runescape.com, you see the big flashy NXT trailer and showing what the game looks like. And if you like this kind of game or you like gaming in general, chances are you'll have a look and there you go. You might have a new RS player. But I mean, yeah, you're entirely right on that. They just need one huge success. I would love it to be Chronicle, in addition to RS, but we'll see where that goes. And I would play Chronicle more. I would probably play it daily if it existed on the mobile side, but unfortunately it doesn't yet. So,
I mean, you make a very good point there. Like, it's not just selling the intellectual property on its own. It's also like, because you spread out these intellectual properties, there's more ways that people get in contact with it. And let's say you buy an Amazon Echo and one of the demo apps is this one piercing note thing, and you're sort of like,
I wonder how much it would cost for them to have that as a demo.
This is really far-fetched, but like, I don't know that this, I don't know how it works. Is it some sort of, it's probably some sort of like app store or whatever.
Yeah, it is.
Or like, yeah. So you look at it and you're like, that's interesting, and you follow it, and you sort of get involved with the lore, and it's another entrance into the game, because I think RuneScape is really looking for an influx of new players as well, because existing user base. So,
and you know, that's a problem with MMOs seem to have these days, is how do you expand beyond your core?
Yeah. So I don't know, all these things seems to really work. I'm wondering if this is also going to come to like other devices that do this. There's Google Home, I think.
Google Home, but that's probably about it for, you know, the ones that are really fleshed out and developed.
Yeah,
because Siri and Cortana really don't have the ability to hook in like this as of right now.
Not yet.
Yeah, not yet. All right. Well, that's a very interesting story, and perhaps one of the most interesting stories we'll come across this week for RS news, given what it means for the entire RS community. Just a quick reminder before we move on to one player suggestion here, that Shadow Gorilla Armor and the Gorilla itself are available until February 28th on Solomon's store. And if you spend 2,400 or buy 2,400 rune coins or more, you get the Gorilla Pet for free. So that is something you can do if you are looking at purchasing rune coins. Though at this point, who doesn't have a legendary pet? Not too many people, right?
Well, I do have one, and I use it all the time. So
there you go.
Definitely worth getting one. But I don't know. Probably not worth spending 2,400.
No, definitely not. All right. Well, then, before we move on to questions, Parnassius was doing some work on the topic for Game Jam. Basically, Jagex has this topic on the forums in which they are going to be working on a few projects during Game Jam, small, high-impact projects, and that you can post your ideas on this forum topic, and the very best will be cherry-picked, and they'll work on them, and the ones that people end up liking and Jagex likes, they will ultimately make their way into the game following a few weeks later. So Parnassius has suggested an update for skilling pets and skilling XP in general, and this was originally an idea from Mod Osborne that was briefly mentioned last year, was for a way to move the XP that you get off into an NPC or pet as an alternative to everyone's favorite prestige system. So basically, yeah, we're on this again. This would satisfy those with the outdated idea that the high score table meaning anything for the majority of the players, since they have no hope in ever seeing themselves on the first page and is a waste of time in a lot of players' minds. PVMers already have the ability to prestige their kill counts after 60k on many Slayer creatures and bosses, and when a player has maxed out a 200 mil XP skill or even hit 99 or 120, why can't we have the ability to begin to level our skill pet? And we're not even, in this case, asking or looking at the idea of, you know, a new pet or a way to get the pet faster. This is just a way of having the pet, for example, act as an XP counter at a various level, and then, or maybe even remove XP off your character at level 99 or 120 or 200 mil based on this. So basically, once the pet hits one of the three target levels, 99, 120, or 200 mil total XP, they have a growth spurt similar to what legendary pets have, and this would be a great addition and add longevity to the game for players who really love certain skills and want to continue on past 200 mil without affecting the high scores board and thus satisfy the majority of players all around. It should not be a part of either comp or trim requirements, since it's purely cosmetic, which would satisfy that end of the player base who have their caves but hate to chase new goals to keep it. And a small buff by the pet could be also looked at, but the main focus should be on the ability to get XP beyond 200 mil through pets.
So, like, listening to that from like a game designer's standpoint, which I am, like, well, for this purpose at least, is skilling pets is something that only a few people have, or at least are supposed to have. And you're locking this piece of content behind getting something that is supposed to be rare, which I think is not ideal. So while I'm not opposed to the idea, I think you should look at a solution that works similar to PVM, where you can do this proceeding without having to use the pet, but the pet can be a broadcaster of this, in the same way that you can ask somebody skilling or boss pet how many kills that person has. That would be my take on it.
All right.
I mean, I definitely see the need for a system like this. I just think, like, this is probably the response that a game designer would have.
And a sane game designer.
A sane game designer. Okay, well.
I'm just saying.
I'm just, like, yeah, this is what I would think, like, reading for this idea, but I definitely hope we do get something like it.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, I'm not going to lie, we've been on this track for a long time, and whether it be through Jagex and the news post not explaining the concepts properly, or if the player base being purely against it for that same reason that, you know, they didn't fully understand the original concept and didn't want to look at modifications to it, I think this is a good middle ground. And, I mean, if we're going to be adding, you know, prestige counters to bosses and whatnot so that you can reset your boss kill counts, why not have something like this where you can have a certain number of ticks over on the amount of XP that you get on your skilling pet, right? Or some other kind of just tool in game. So, I mean, and in some ways, doing it outside of the pet interface and outside of the pets would be probably simpler than adding it onto the pets.
Yeah, especially because, like, it comes with these game design considerations that Not all everyone has a pet, and definitely not a lot of people have pets and all the skills. So you don't want to lock the content behind that.
Yeah, fair enough. And, you know, I never completely thought of that when that happened, and that's because I do have a skilling pet already. Do you?
Yeah, I actually do have one by now.
Okay, good.
So, yeah, I mean, it's the game designer's job to think about these things. And
yeah,
and
most definitely.
I think it's also Jarek's job to listen to player suggestions and transform them into something that both satisfies the player's desires, but also like what fits in the game. And I think that this is always a tension between game designer and players. That is, I find it actually one of the most interesting parts of being a game designer, because you get to find this balance between the two, but it's also really hard because you want to satisfy your players, so it's really easy to go the wrong side. But sometimes you want to do like what's the best for the game, and you go on the other side.
And sometimes they can't see that side of the argument, right?
True. It really takes skill to be able to do this, and I mean it's part of the passion, it's part of the job, and
Very well said. All right. Thank you, Parnassius, and I'm glad that we got a chance to talk about this. All right. Moving on to questions then. We got two questions this week. The first one is from Wiley. Hey, guys. Wiley again. Do you guys think that shields are in need of a buff of some sort? Even tanks at high-level bosses only bring them as switches to get strong resonance off and mainly use an offhand weapon. Also, Coke or Pepsi. I kind of wish we could grind farming products like cabbages for Herblore XP, don't you? Shields. I feel like, you know, ever since EOC came out, shields have taken a back seat. And, you know, there are cases where you can use shields, but no one uses a shield 100% of the time, whether it be for bossing or Slayer. In fact, Slayer, you probably never even use a shield, right?
Correct, except for with dragons. But then you have super antifires, so...
Yeah.
No. So I think this is an interesting thing. Because when Jagex introduced the seven spells, they had all this like shield dome and channel something and those things. And the idea behind that was to get roles to be a part of RuneScape Combat, to have like a healer maybe and like a tank and DPS. And while we do have tanks, I mean...
And we do have
like,
the ability
go to like a,
for support
like a
now.
Farrago kill. Yeah, go to like a Farrago kill. Like there will be two tanks. And the rest will be DPS. Like, there's some sort of role service. But it really depends on, like, what you want to do with it. And I think a lot of RuneScape's combat design is built in such a way that you can do a lot by yourself. Like, there's no class system, for example, in RuneScape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not limited.
So nobody is specialized in tanking or healing or DPSing, and which means that everybody can sort of do everything as long as they have the skills, which makes it harder to do these things. And I think if you want to figure out what to do with shields, you have to figure out what you want to do with specializations. That do you actually want people to specialize in using shields? And I actually at some point built like this I spent an hour or so just designing some sort of tech tree system. Like in a lot of games, you would have these skilling trees, right? That every level you get to like pick your skill, but you don't just get them all. Like what happens in RuneScape is like every now and then you get an ability for free. Like there's no choice, there's no specialization. Everybody that has the same levels can do the exact same thing. And like
so it'd be kind of like the skill mastery thing except for combat then, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and then like I mean sure, maybe somebody that is 99 in all combat skills should be able to do everything. But like the path to the end should maybe be different. Or maybe like 99 might be the maximum level, but to actually get all the different abilities you have to get 120 or something. I whatever works. But like that is not the case in RuneScape. So then you get to this point that like everybody does everything, and then I mean everybody wants to do the most damage. So.
And you know that was also a very interesting discussion we had last week. Is that in previous bossing encounters the focus has been on the tank, but here in Next the focus was actually on the DPSers, which goes back to a very early bossing paradigm in RS. Focus purely on damage. So, I mean, even in the latest bossing encounter, this isn't a thing. And, you know, tanks, high level, only use the shields every so often. So, would, you know, short of coming out with these tech tree changes that you have in mind here, do you think an option might be to have some kind of boss that requires the tank to always wear a shield?
No, that I think forcing it is not what you want to do. You want to keep people like you want to give people the opportunity to do to make the wrong choice. That's one of the things that's like one of the rules I think of game design is allowing players to make the wrong choice. Is what makes the game fun, and that sounds really stupid, but it's true. Like if you always allow like if the player always like is set what to do, it's not fun.
Right. If you're always gonna win and you're always gonna do the best damage, yeah. There's no point.
Of course, then there's the opposite. You should also make sure that the player has the ability to make the right choice and that it's not based on random chance. But anyway, I'm talking about this specialization thing, and if you make the trade-off of going with a shield in this case, you can't become a shield expert until you like level up, right? That's right. A really high thing. You could take that down a bit, and you could say right now you can switch between weapons instantly, which means that there's no reason to wear a shield like all the time, because if you need it, you equip it, you do what you have to do, and you go back. Why does it have to be that easy? Like if we want shields to like If you want there to be a sacrifice for you to be able to use shield spells, there should be a sacrifice, and maybe we should not allow changing equipment during combat. It's a big thing.
That is a big thing. Lots of people wouldn't like that.
Oh no, people would hate me if I proposed this. I would get all kinds of bad things over me. But like, think about the consequences and think about the trade-offs you have to start making. Hybrid armor becomes highly valuable, shields become a lot more interesting, and this is just something that trickles down to really old combat systems in RuneScape that allow for this.
And so do you think this is a problem of EOC not going far enough?
It's a question of identity. It's so RuneScape used to be this really simple combat system, which worked like it was boring, but it worked. And then they were like, we want to become this really advanced combat system like other games do. And what we ended up with was something in the middle. And while I think RuneScape's combat system is definitely in a lot of cases a nice balance, you have to make sacrifices if you like don't go all the way. Yeah. And the one of these things of like going with like instant switches is what causes this strange balance. And do I think that's wrong? I think it's something that would need a solution that adapts to the RuneScape system. And yeah, I don't know. I think it's definitely like a consequence of a decision that was made to make EOC
more accessible. Maybe.
Yes.
Would be the word to put it. So in effect, they don't necessarily need a buff per se. It would come down to a redesign of the role of shields and the general role of various people in combat in general.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's definitely something to think
Sorry
about.
Sorry for the long answer.
No, that's fine. And I think 5 years after EOC, these are the kind of discussions that we need to have with, you know, is EOC working? Are we aiming in the direction that Jagex initially wanted us? And
so that's,
is it responsive enough for a modern game?
That's the question for you. Like, 5 years after ESC, like, the point where we are now, like, looking back, do you think that, like, ignoring the way we got here, like, in the end, do you think we are in a better place than if ESC would not have happened?
Most definitely.
All right.
And the reason I say that, for myself, from my own perspective, in the Slayer that I've done, which was probably level 90 to 95 over the last 5 years, is that it is significantly less boring than it was before for me. Granted, you can still Netflix and kill if you want to, but if you want to take full control of the combat, you can do that. So, and I think that's great. All right, Coke or Pepsi?
Pepsi.
Coke here.
Pepsi Max, to be precise.
Okay, I'm not sure what that one is. What is that?
I want the most caffeine per liter.
Oh, okay. So that's like a stimulant then.
No, it's like it has slightly more caffeine per liter, but also no sugar. So it's why I like it is because it's slightly less sweet. I mean, Coke is sweet.
Oh, okay.
But like it's slightly less sweet than your average Coke. So,
all right.
Yeah.
I'll have to try that next time I see it somewhere. Okay. And also, Wiley wishes we could grind farming products like cabbages for herbalar XP, don't you? Well, I mean, not necessarily just cabbages, but...
Why would you think about grinding down those beautiful, elegant cabbages? Like, how?
The descendants of Brassica?
How does the thought even cross your mind?
Well, I could think of them being used for various herbalar potions and whatnot, and, you know, I would like an expansion and more interesting things to put in, so I don't see why not in those cases. But yeah, cabbages. Why cabbages,
things
right?
But cabbages.
Yeah.
No cabbages. Okay. Potatoes, fine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, then you'd end up with like a mashed potato potion.
For your daily carbs.
And then carrots, that could be one that would make you see better.
Yeah. Or you could make cakes out of it.
Oh, yeah, that would be great. That really would. I like carrot cake.
I don't.
Oh, damn. All right. Thank you, Wiley. This next one is from Hatmaster Bug. What's your favorite kind of hat in RS? It's been a while since we've had a Fashionscape question like this.
So it's not really a hat, but the thing I'm using is sunglasses, so...
Oh, yeah, there's one.
It's part of the hat slot, so I don't know. Does it count?
Yeah.
Okay, hat, sunglasses, all the way.
Other options, you know, I am... gosh, I can't remember the one that was suggested to me for my 2017 outfit, but I'm wearing that right now. It's from one of the quests. Prior to that, for a good number of years, I wore the black beret because it came from Treasure Hunter. I know people have also preferred the top hat. There's also the bowlers, the straw bowlers, but, you know, those really don't have a... didn't really get an NXT graphic update, so they still kind of look as if they're from RS2, which is kind of disappointing. If you look at that Treasure Hunter hat, Pith helmet, I also have. I seem to have a collection of hats in RS, don't I, now that I'm naming all them off, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's chrome goggles. Remember the Book of Faces?
Oh, right, yeah.
When they had the...
The Facebook integration.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's not a bowler hat. What's that? What's that straw hat from Treasure Hunter? I don't know.
It's the farmer's hat.
No, it's not the farmer's hat. It's not the farmer's hat. Oh, I can't remember what it is right now for the life of me. But, you know, I think if we take RuneScape and Hatscape, you end up with something that will ultimately end up looking like TF2, which I'm not sure is a good thing. Oh, boater, not bowler. Boaters, black boater. Those hats. But yeah, I mean, there is a definite shortage of, I think, hats in RS, but I'm not sure that making RuneScape the hat simulator like TF2 was is a good idea. So while I would always like to see more, I don't think that is a focus that Jagex should undertake. So no, those are my choices of ones that I wear around, and I don't know. sometimes it's better not to wear one. No. So you're going to go with the sunglasses then?
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Hatmaster Bug. Very interesting question. And it's been a while since we've had those Fashionscape questions. And to underscore, there's nothing wrong with submitting very simple questions like that. We actually like those kind. So if you want to send us more of those, you can email them questions@rsbnb.com or leave us a DM on Twitter @rsbnb. We also have the Google Voice number, which is 571-57BNB or 571-572-2632. Alrighty, on to tech news we go. So, you know, it seems as though in recent months there has been a huge focus on something called fake news, whether or not something is fake news and how to combat it, and what role the technology that we use should be playing a role in informing our decisions about what we read and what we don't read on the internet. I'm of the opinion that everything should be, you know, unfiltered, with reasonable exceptions, you know, NSFW, things that aren't truly appropriate to show on screen like that. I don't think there should be filtering by Google, Facebook, or Twitter if things are false. I mean, I am a proponent of the old saying, caveat emptor, buyer beware. In this case, beware the news you're reading. But this week at the News Impact Summit in Paris, in partnership with First Draft, the Google News Lab is presenting a new feature called CrossCheck, which is a coalition news verification project with the goal of helping the French electorate make sense of the news that's coming up in the French elections later on this year. So it's going to be combined with Facebook, First Draft, Google, and many other news platforms. And this was actually first launched in the U.S., so moving it to France is the next logical step for this. So what do you think of this?
So let me see. So what is the exact goal of this?
The exact goal of this is to say that if you go to Google News or you're searching for something and it pulls up a news item, it'll tell you if it is biased, wrong, or not factual. So
I see. So it doesn't filter, but
it doesn't necessarily filter.
Okay.
And
that's at least a more elegant solution.
Right. And I mean, it's going to be there's going to be a thing that says what it is if you're reading it. And, you know, I think this is one step towards filtering, because Google is already kind of does this with mobile search results and putting mobile search or sites that are mobile friendly first in the search results. So they could definitely do that with news, put news that they deem as quote truthful and factual up first. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting experiment. That's pretty much all I'm prepared to say right now on this, because we don't know if it's going to be pulling things out that should be left in there, whether or not they be true in the general sense that the public views them. So basically, I think that this is going to be a very interesting test to see if something like this can indeed hold water and if it should be used going forward. Because if it is used and it, you know, shows news from where you want to get your news, whether it be, you know, an independent news site or one of the huge ones, if it shows from all of those and it doesn't necessarily filter out things that, you know, might be within the narrative that Google would like to push or that the various news companies would like to push, if it allows differing opinions on those but still shows them, I think then that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, it has been shown as it's hard for people to find out what's true and what's false. And I definitely think there is a huge need to provide easier ways to find out what might be true and false. Like, right, we can't expect everybody to cross-check all the references in a news article. And even then, like, I mean, if you want, the easy way of getting things that are true is take a source that you fully, fully trust. But even then, like, sometimes it's really nice to have something like Google has a network of things. Like assign some machine learning to figure out what is true, what is false.
Yeah, but I think
having
that's
those tools,
doing.
Having these tools is a plus.
Right, and it should be available to everyone, regardless of your persuasion.
Correct.
And
should it use those results to, like, should it use those checks to improve search results? It's hard to say. It's
right.
really hard to
because,
say.
Because, I mean, I'll give you an example that's not related to news. You know, we don't use a secure certificate on the RSPNB website because mostly when you come to our site, you are requesting things from us. You're not sending things to us. The only thing you really send to us are pictures on RuneWire and your forum password when you log in. So if Google ultimately decided to rate us as less secure because of that and degrade us, does that make sense? I don't know. I don't think it does.
These days it is so simple, I think, like relatively simple to secure a website. And the question is it the role of, like, if you ask us as tech savvy people, and probably most of the people that listen to this podcast are pretty tech savvy, like, if you ask them who is responsible for making sure that your password doesn't get leaked, they say the end user. But the truth is, like they can't be trusted. Like, the end user is not always, like, aware of these things. So then you have these companies that inform consumers, but
do they really even understand that? Like, when it says it's not secure?
I don't know. And then the point is, like, who is going to police this? And, like, right now it looks like browsers are going to do it. Is that a good thing? I don't know. I think maybe not. But who else is going to do it in a way that is as effective?
Yeah. And then, I mean, this all comes back to news, is should Google and the search engines be the arbiters of deciding what is factual, what is not, right?
I mean, probably they shouldn't be, but it is the easiest place to fix it.
Yeah.
And that makes for this conflict that I don't think anybody has an answer on.
Right. And I'll give you a good example of this. You know, if you were searching for news in the US election, and, you know, if you were a Trump supporter and you were, you know, you might have had an interest in the website Breitbart.com as one of your places you read for news. Now, Google feels, and lots of people feels, that's a site that pushes conspiracies. But on the same side of it, you know, while some of their reporting might be on the fringe, they do actually publish news from the wire services as well. So painting an entire site for a few things that they might have published really isn't a good thing to do. So, coming back,
I mean,
to
it's
the
also
story.
It's also the responsibility of a news site to build up their overall image. Like, if you do real news and conspiracy theories next to each other, then, like, you're sort of shooting yourself in the foot. Like, if you want to be a really truthful news medium, you leave those conspiracy theories alone. So, I don't know.
Right, but if someone who is searching for news and they enjoyed reading that site, should that site be filtered for them? Because obviously they have the brain power to read that site and know and hopefully reason what is real and what isn't on that website. So should that be filtered from that?
I don't know. It feels like this website is a bit sketchy, mixing up these two things.
Well, I mean, I've never personally seen conspiracy theories on there, and
okay, well, I mean,
but that's the direction that people went for it. So okay. I'm just using that as a general example of something Google would assume, or any news aggregator might.
it's hard to tell. This is a conflict. This is going to be one of the big questions of this decade.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not going to be just Google. It's going to be Facebook. It's going to be Twitter, if Twitter is still around in a couple years. But it's going to be all these companies that are going to have to deal with that. And, you know, there's a right way and there's a wrong way. The right way leads to better information for everyone. The wrong way leads us quickly to 1984.
I think things are a bit more gray, but
well, you're gonna end up in either way, one or the other, right? Eventually. But
I think it's not too black white there.
Well, it's not black and white, but you're eventually gonna start treading toward one of those in the future. All right.
Let's hope it's the former one then.
That's right. So, Facebook. Facebook was involved, of course, with the Oculus VR pop-up shops and Best Buy stores in the U.S. They are scaling back that presence, believe it or not. So Facebook is closing around 200 of its 500 Oculus VR demo stations at Best Buys in the U.S. This was the first big retail push for VR, and this decision from Facebook comes after at these Best Buy stations where they've gone multiple days without actually doing a single VR demonstration. So the demand wasn't there for it. Perhaps people just didn't understand what was being demoed. Because, you know, the whole headset can be kind of intimidating because you don't know what you're going to see when you put that on. You don't know if it's going to be worth it. But anyways, stores that previously offered the demos will still continue to sell the headsets and accompanying controller. And Facebook has actually thought about creating their own storefronts that could demo VR. Okay, they're not Apple, but I'm not sure how that would go. And I just, was thinking through writing this out, is this, you know, the beginning of the end for the popular hype of VR? And maybe is VR out of reach for normal consumers? And if not, what's needed to bring VR mainstream?
Well, the last question is really simple to answer, and that is...
Cost?
Cost, yes. So,
yeah, because Oculus...
New things are always expensive because it's like there's new techniques, and over time the manufacturers will figure out how to make these things cheaper. They will get away from like lots of manual work, like more will be automated, and at some point it will be really cheap to make these things. Like a couple of years ago, having a curved TV, that's a good example. Like a curved TV, like a few years ago, was weird and really expensive to get. Now the techniques are there, and we even have mobile phones that have like these edges, like the Samsung Edge, for example,
mm-hmm.
has like a curved glass, and these things can be made. So techniques and technologies get cheaper over time. So if you want to make it mainstream, it needs to be cheaper, because right now you pay, what is it, $1,000?
$600 for the VR headset in the US.
$600 for like a headset, and that's like...
And the controllers are $200.
It is still a bit of a gimmick.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some VR games out there, but is there really something that you like need to experience in your life? Not really. Is like a large chunk of the games that gets released available on VR? Not really. So it's VR is still in this phase of early adapters. And I think that ties into why these storefronts are becoming a bit less popular. Like the real early adapters, like the people that always try the new things, they've seen it by now. They probably own one by now.
Yeah, that's true.
And people that are like, that's like, I don't know, they're not going to try it anyway. So I think we're now in this in-between phase where... The success of VR is going to be determined by how much these early adopters can like spread and how much products are going to be adapted for VR. And
right.
This is the critical phase, and it's either going to go downhill or uphill from here.
Yeah,
and
it could all come crashing down like 3D TV did.
Correct. And, everything goes through this phase, and It's, I think it's not surprising. I'm not an expert on this, but I think if you would show this to somebody that is an expert, they would be able to explain every single thing that's happening right now and give you probably a few predictions of what's likely to happen.
Yeah. And I mean, I think Steam has their VR store, which is good, but most of them appear to be VR demos. And, you know, if you could get beyond that, then yeah, there might be a future for it. But right now, I mean, I think it would be a huge stretch for Facebook to open up their own storefronts to demo VR. I mean, it's really not something that you need that much of.
That would show a whole lot of confidence.
It really would. It really would.
In the product, it might help, but it would be a long shot, probably.
Yep. All right. Well, we did take a quick passing jab at Twitter. It is that time of the quarter when we do talk about that stopped working. That story stopped working. Okay. Well, we'll find a new link for that story later. Apparently, I'm not allowed to read the story that I was reading and copied notes from earlier. So, all right. Well, basically, Twitter has released its earning reports for this past quarter, and revenue grew at just 1% year on year over quarter four, and advertising sales continued to fall through this. Though a year ago, revenues were up 48% compared to just the 1% this year. And after this announcement was made over the past few days, the Twitter stock has dropped around 10%. As of today, it's down around 12%. So this leaves Twitter with a market cap of $12 billion and a 2016 revenue of $2.5 billion. So you have this company that only made $2.6 billion in revenue and was valued at $12 billion market cap through its stocks, is earning, you know, or having revenues grow at 1%, is constantly losing money, and people don't understand what it's for still. It's been out over a decade, and I think this is pointing to something really happening with Twitter in the future, probably a sale. I mean, like, what mature tech company can have revenues grow at just 1% and still be losing so much money and stay alive? Like, people are just sinking money into this thing expecting it'll go somewhere, and it's been that way since the very beginning. I don't think Twitter's ever turned a profit, but, I mean, I could be wrong on that, and ultimately, I think that's, you know, just a sign of the way that all these companies were invested in, and some of them got lucky, like Facebook, but some of them, like Twitter, just had money keep coming in to keep them alive, and if not for that money, Twitter would have died off years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, at this point, the best I think that they can hope for is that they end up being sold to someone else who might actually do something with the company. Granted, there is a, you know, there's huge opportunity for people with lots of followers on the platform, but they don't seem to turn that into money. So, I don't know. I have a few ideas of what Twitter could do to maybe try and make themselves more accessible, but what do you think?
I mean, I use Twitter sort of. I'm starting to use it less and less, and part of that is the changes Twitter is making. And it used to fill this niche of, like, I'm still find this concept of sharing things in 140 characters really interesting. It used to fill a niche, but, like, it somehow doesn't keep me interested for that long anymore. Like, it has a bit of an identity crisis.
Yeah, like, and the fact, I
like,
mean,
it used to have this separation of, like, retweeting and likes, and I liked that. I was like, I can show my appreciation for things, or I can add this thing of another person to my own narrative, because I see my own Twitter timeline as an own narrative. And then a couple of weeks ago, in my, like, list of, like, people I follow, likes started showing up in the same way as retweets. And I'm like,
I think that was a bug, because
It's still happening.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's still happening.
See, I use a client for it, so I don't see that. But that's disturbing. Yeah, that shouldn't be happening.
It is.
So, I mean, they don't know. They don't know what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, that's correct. And I don't know. Like, if you look back, did it ever know what it was supposed to be?
They're the famous company that said a business model will emerge.
Like, there was this period of time where people recorded like the everything they did on Twitter.
Yeah.
Like, there was this meme that people would like tell the results of their latest toilet visit. Like, I don't know. I'm not interested in that kind of stuff. But there used to be this period where Twitter was so hyped and everybody would put everything on it. And then that went away, and then it turned into something like this thing that business people use, like, sort of. So
yeah, to promote a brand or something. And
now you have these ads that show up like normal tweets, and like, I don't know.
It's a mess.
And I find it fun to follow certain people, but it does so much overhead.
Right. And, you know, I would love to abandon it for RSVNB and other things. But unfortunately, you can't, because that's the primary way outside of iTunes of saying, hey, guys, the podcast is up. Mm-hmm. Right? So,
I mean, like, look at all the other big companies. Like, what does Facebook do? Facebook connects people, right?
Right.
That's what it does. Like, it does lots of things.
And it makes money using the like data, which is a very simple business model, and it's working.
Yeah. So what does Google do? Google makes information available. That's what it does.
And they make money by selling advertisements based on that information.
What does Uber do? They drive people around. Like these are all big tech companies that have one goal and do one thing really well. What does Twitter do?
Twitter provides an outlet for Donald Trump to talk to the people at 3 a.m.
Yes, that's what it does.
I actually had a crazy idea of a way of something to save Twitter. But I don't think it would work after with conflict of interest laws and whatnot. But
so yeah, it's a platform that it does nothing really well.
Yeah,
and that's a shame. I think the idea was fun, but it gets old if you don't really flesh it out.
Yeah, and I mean, for me, I have had a couple of interesting ideas of things that could be done with the information that comes out of Twitter, but their transparency and openness and the way they control their API is just really disappointing to third-party people who want to gain access to it, because you can't gain access to the full stream of data coming out of Twitter unless you're one of these verified partners like, you know, TweetDeck, or which is actually owned by them now, or any of the big Twitter clients. So with that being said, there's no reason for people to try and do something with the platform because they're not open with it. That's problem number one, or one of the problems. Another problem with it is that they are incredibly vague with what they're going to be doing with the platform going forward. So that prevents people from wanting to spend time there and invest in it, which anyone who knows anything about investment knows that that's huge for success and profitability. And I think the third thing is that they have gone, you know, they've been so wishy-washy with what they're doing in regards to abuse that, you know, the simple mute feature that came out a number of months ago, which in reality was a simple way of solving all these abuse problems, should have really been out, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. But why would it take so long to put out a mute feature like that? I don't know. So they're just really behind the ball on a lot of things. And, you know, perhaps the best way of making the company profitable is to offer, you know, a paid model for people, the true power users of Twitter, you know, who have millions of followers, and use it to reach people, and then allow the rest of us to reach those people and then access the data freely. Maybe. I don't know. But even that might be too little too late.
it's probably going to go the way of MySpace.
Yeah.
Let's just conclude that.
Because, I mean, there's a really great bookmarking website out there that, you know, if you have ever wanted to save a bookmark for your stuff on your computer, you can save the bookmark to your browser, yes. But if you do that, you ultimately end up with bookmarks that might, you know, go dead in a number of years. So that's a problem. And this bookmarking site allows you to store bookmarks in much the same way that Delicious did back in the day, except what they offer for a small fee yearly is the ability for you to have all of your stuff that you save to them archived in an HTML format. So if you discover an article that you like and you want to bookmark it, sure, bookmark it. And if you want to come back to it 2 years from now and the website's gone, no problem. You have an archive for it. And it works really well. And that website is called Pinboard. I use it for my bookmarks. Previously, it used to be a one-time fee to sign up and use it, but now it's $9.99 a month, so it's a little hard to recommend for people. But being grandfathered in is that I only paid once. It is a really great service. So that is something that Twitter should look at, is offering true value to its people, something that they can't get elsewhere. And maybe it's time to go back to being a true startup. I don't know.
I think you skipped ahead to the pick of the week.
Oh, believe me, I've used Pinboard as pick of the week before. Anyways, let us move on to the skill of the month then. I would love to abandon Twitter, but I don't think I can. Okay, so our skill of the month this month is fishing. We are seeing a linear progression by Adiron Cronon, aka Touchpad Pro, with 17.5 million XP gained so far this month. Second up is JamAndy52 with 13.6 million XP gained. And in third, we have Parnassius with 10.3 million XP gained. And, you know, as this is the fishing skill of the month, 7 out of the 11 people competing do have over 1 million XP stored here. So always nice to see these primary skills, I think. But 17 million fishing XP so far. And I mean, hey, it's bonus XP month, so this thing might actually change once bonus XP weekend happens, right?
Definitely.
So,
no fishing. It's one of these things that are like over time. So
yeah, and I mean, it's one of the things you can put Netflix on, and away you go, right? So not too
Netflix
intensive.
And fish.
There you go. There you go. All right, on to achievements of the week we go. First up, we have Wiley with 99 Herblore on February 8th. Then Arany also got 200 million Constitution XP on February 8th. That's a pretty good one as well.
That is a lot of Constitution experience. I could not fathom doing that much combat.
Yeah.
Anyway, Marco995 got 99 Prayer on February 7th. And JamAndy52 got 120 fishing on February 4. Congrats to all of you.
Good job, everyone. Nice achievements. So I believe you have a pick of the week for us.
Yes. So I actually want to pick an Indiegogo crowdsourcing project, a crowdfunding project, I should say. For a documentary, and I think you might actually be interested in this because it's a documentary about the Star Trek series Deep Space Nine.
Ooh.
So yeah, Deep Space Nine. That it started running in January 1993. I was a few months old, so I don't remember. But yeah, it was the black sheep of Star Trek. It played on the space station instead of a ship, and it was not quite as popular as the other series. But like over the past,
it's aged decades, really well.
It has aged really well. It has like grown a new fan base, basically, which is interesting. it I think it might be the series that is like has gained the most fans after its completion. And that has led to the original, showrunner, Ira Stephen Bear, to make a documentary about like what is it that people find so interesting about Deep Space Nine, and what was it about, and what themes like have aged. And they did most of the interviews. Most of the cast is actually on there, which I found really fun to see, because I'm actually watching the series right now, so it's fun to see this in parallel. And but yeah, they actually in need of money to finalize it, so they need to do licensing, they need to do a few more interesting interviews, they need to do post-production, and they are raising money for that. And hopefully we can then see the documentary come out in February 2018. So yeah, what do you think?
I actually think this is a great thing to do, because as it is, Deep Space Nine is one of perhaps the most interesting Star Trek series that ever was produced. And, you know, there's so much about it at the time that we really didn't grasp what they were getting at until we entered the modern era. And what we see there is really relevant today, even though, you know, it was filmed in the mid-1990s. So,
I mean, I'm watching it like the first time right now. I'm pretty much halfway, and it is baffling how easy it is to find parallels in what is happening right now on the world globally. And it is incredible how I don't want to say predict, but it's incredible how they were able to make these things part of a TV series, which at that time might not have been explored that much yet. And it is like, I have watched Enterprise before, I have watched TNG, The Next Generation, before, and Deep Space Nine is the first series that has actually had some episodes that really got me thinking or really got me emotionally involved. And I am actually quite interested in having a documentary and explore that further. And I think it is amazing that we can look at this and see what made Star Trek so good, and hopefully that will bring up some interesting things that we can use in either future series or maybe in our own lives.
Yeah, and that's what it's all about. And I think lots of people, when they look at it, you know, oh, it's just, you know, it's another space show. But no, there's actually a whole lot more to it, and you got to really get into the weeds before you start seeing all this. And that is perhaps the most undervalued thing that you can get from watching any of the Star Trek series, and Deep Space Nine is definitely one of them. And I'm of the opinion that Deep Space Nine has perhaps one of the best Star Trek episodes of the entire series, or of all the series that have been created before, and that's one of the season 6 episodes. So
I'm not there yet, yeah. So no spoilers.
No spoilers, but it's called In the Pale Moonlight.
All right, yeah, I've heard of that name before. It's apparently, yeah, but yeah, I mean, it's clear from like little video they have on Indiegogo and the way they describe it, and the fact that they're looking to raise money, that this is a passion project. And passion projects are the best.
So, oh, yeah. And behind the camera, this documentary will be produced by the team from For the Love of Spock.
Yes.
That was another good Star Trek documentary.
I've watched that documentary. It showed me so much and made me look at things with renewed respect. And I mean, I definitely think this is worth like spending some money on. Like for $5, you get access to like a lot of like the raw interviews, the unedited footage, the behind the scenes, that kind of stuff. And for $15, you can actually get early access to the actual full documentary. But I would not be surprised if it ends up on Netflix in the end.
Yeah, most definitely.
Because For the Love of Spock is on Netflix, for me at least, in the UK. So, but yeah, like every actor that you can think of from the series is involved. I don't think there's any major character missing.
Avery Brooks is not listed. Captain Sisko.
Oh, right. That's typical. Yeah. Pretty much everybody else, though. But yeah, most important characters are there. And so that's why I wanted to mention it.
All right. That's called What We Left Behind, Looking Back, Star Trek Deep Space Nine. So what you been up to this week on RS?
Actually trying to get a look at the update before the end of the week because I have to be on the podcast, which is I have to change my rhythm a bit. Usually I just left the update for the weekend. I took a look at not the Valentine's update, clearly, but the invention thing. I got myself the arc banded items, and I'm getting really close to 99 invention. I'm 96 right now, so it's only 8 or 9 items I have to sieve in or disassemble, and I'm there. So trying to,
that's the home stretch.
Yeah, so I always thought invention would be my last skill to max, and combat would outrun it, but truth is, my combat is still not maxed, so I have to start doing that a bit. It's just it's a bit harder to do combat in really short an hour stretches a day, which I play half an hour a day, and combat is something you want to sit down for and spend at least an hour doing.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully I can get some of that done over weekends and maybe get my max cape sometime.
Ooh.
During this quarter, and we can have a little
that would be fun
party podcast or something.
Sure. Alrighty. As for me this week on RS, I made the horrible mistake of doing a runecrafting harmony pillar.
oh dear.
Because I'm on a Harmony Moss kick for overloads and then Perfect Plus Potion, because that's going to be a huge amount of XP on double XP weekend. So, I did a runecrafting pillar by mistake this week. That was bad. Will not do it again. But aside from that, just herb farming runs and, of course, checking out the augmented equipment and the Valentine's Day update, which I got to work some time into as well for that herb lore XP. So that's me for the week. Not too much to write home about there. But of course, I believe that wraps this edition of RSBNB update up. I don't think there's anything else I have to say that's left over.
There's also not anything left that I have to say.
All right then. Well, we will see you all next week for another episode of RSBNB update. Thank you for sharing your time with us. Sirion's back.
Bye.